Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Hi, this is Here and Now Anytime, where we give you a little news, a little something you weren't expecting, and always a fresh, in-depth perspective on current events, arts and culture, and stories that matter. Subscribe or follow to get all our episodes out every weekday. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend about us to help spread the word. Now here's the show.
From Iran's point of view, like, this was a total success. They scared the hell out of Israel. So this was like a demonstration of what Iran could do to create a lot of havoc if you violate its rules.
Iran's attack on Israel was more symbolic than destructive, but it still had a big impact. It's Monday, April 15th, and this is Here and Now Anytime. From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, what you need to know, with jury selection underway in the case of former President Trump's alleged hush money payments on the eve of the 2016 election. And racing royalty Kara Goucher and Des Linden talk about everything from the future of women's running to doping.
It isn't a level playing field, and people like Des go out there and do their best because there's nothing she can do.
But first, Iran's volley of missiles and drones into Israel over the weekend was almost entirely intercepted. And even though the attack didn't hit its target, it still achieved strategic goals for Iran. As the Jerusalem Post put it, the attacks bring, quote, 4 decades of shadow war into the open. Iran was responding to what the Pentagon agrees was an Israeli attack on the Iranian embassy compound in Syria. And now the U.S., French, and British governments are urging Israel to exercise restraint and not further escalate the regional conflict. Borzu Deragahi is a journalist based in the Middle East and senior fellow with the Atlantic Council. He spoke with Robin Young from Istanbul.
People in Israel were terrified on Sunday, mm-hmm. As they were told to, you know, go and shelter into their houses and so on. So, you know, there was a sense of fear. What are analysts saying? This is unprecedented. It was yet measured. The Americans alerted Israel well ahead. How do they do that? Most likely through Iraqi intermediaries. Iran told Iraq with the understanding that Iraq would tell the U.S. and the U.S. would tell Israel. This was meant as a, you know, kind of an Aaron Waters show to show Israel that it no longer dominates the skies, that Iran, despite basically lacking an air force, in conventional air force, and not having any fighter jets built after the Cold War, has kind of managed to assemble an air strategy that denies Israel domination of the air, maybe for the first time in decades.
Well, and you say everybody was petrified. You could watch the entire thing unfold here on CNN, and you could see the drones coming in like twinkling stars, and then you could see when they were hit. It did seem like a show, but a terrifying one. But we know that not all, even Arab countries in the region, have the same feelings about Iran. We remember the Iran Revolution was to topple a monarchy, and the hope at the time was to topple other monarchies in other Arab countries. But are all the countries in the region feeling they have to pull together to support Iran?
No. Oh. No country is feeling that. But no country is also happy with Israel in the region because of what's unfolding in Gaza. Israel is not winning any popularity contests these days. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the kind of regional powers that could threaten and pose a challenge to Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the United Emirates, as well as Turkey, all of them are trying to accommodate Iran. They don't want the trouble of having Iran as their enemy. They're all very measured. They're very cautious. You know, we urge de-escalation on both sides, no provocations, and so on. Mm. And that is the mood in the area. They want this to go. And I was surprised at how responsible and calm the media response was in the area. The official and semi-official media, everyone's just spooked.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and how do they view this? I mean, you point out that this was Iran demonstrating that they have air power, that doesn't singularly belong to Israel. But some are seeing this as a complete demonstration of failure by Iran. Some of the missiles didn't work. Every single one was taken down.
From Iran's point of view, like, this was a total success. They scared the hell out of Israel. They, you know, had Israeli civilians running for cover and so on. They had the Israeli government panicked. They had Bitcoin collapse, you know. So this was like a demonstration of what Iran could do to create a lot of havoc if you violate its rules. The Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, said that an attack on our embassy is an attack on Iranian soil. I went and read the Vienna Convention. He's got that wrong. That's not accurate. But he, you know, treated it that way. And so, you know, he's saying this is a pre-warning to what will happen if there's an attack on Iranian soil. It's like a message in a kind of neatly shaped, as you mentioned, CNN live view kind of presentation.
Yeah, well, we should point out that there was a 7-year-old girl who was hit by one of the missiles, and so we're keeping an eye on that story. But the U.S. is now telling Israel that while it will help Israel defend itself, it will not participate in any counteroffensive against Iran. But we know that Netanyahu is getting pressure from members of his white right-wing cabinet to respond. We know that Iran has proxy militias who are presumably cheering Iran on. What's the sense of what happens next?
Oh, Israel will respond in some way. The question is, will Netanyahu respond in a measured and non-escalatory way? Or will it, you know, respond to Iran's unprecedented action by launching its own unprecedented action?
Mm. Borzu Dargahi, journalist based in the Middle East, senior fellow with the Atlantic Council, who always helps us look at things through the eyes of the region in the Middle East. Borzu, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Well, let's keep going here. The U.S. says it won't support Israel taking direct offensive action against Iran, and world leaders are echoing U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who said yesterday that the Middle East was on the brink.
The people of the region are confronting a real danger of a devastating full-scale conflict. Now is the time to defuse and de-escalate. Now is the time for maximum restraint.
Well, here now, security analyst Jim Walsh of the MIT Security Studies Program joins us in the studio. And Jim, we were just hearing what many analysts are saying, that this was designed to show a new red line, you know, from Iran. But we also heard on the show today how people in the region were terrified. We watched it on CNN. You were nodding, the drones in the air and the missiles coming in and out. As they get, for hours, it was terrifying. First, were you terrified?
You know, my wife will vouch for this. It hit me pretty hard, but I was sort of numb and depressed. You know, not full-fledged depressed, but low energy, sad. You know, I've been working on this region for 2 decades, trying to avoid a broader war. I'm afraid we're nudging close to that, depending on what Israel's next steps and intentions are. So I was sort of bummed, and I lost, you know, I was watching like everyone else, but I didn't bounce back till really today and get back in the saddle hard, because it was sort of a depressing thing to unfold. And I was reminded, as you probably were, Robin, of watching CNN's first broadcast war back, and that was the invasion of Iraq or invasion of Kuwait, here we were all over again.
The bombs falling on Baghdad. In fact, on this program, we were on the air with someone in Baghdad, and I had to tell them, I'm watching CNN, the bombs are falling on you right now. So, okay, well, so you say this, but, you know, some people are saying it seems so choreographed. And we heard from Borzu Dargahi earlier on the program that he is hearing that this was all messaging that took place from Iran through Iraq. You're nodding yes, because the U.S. knew about this for days. They warned Israel. And is there any chance that this was so well planned, that there was a message to Iran, okay, you're angry about that attack. You go ahead and do this because the U.S. and Jordan and Israel are intercept it, and Israel gets to say, see, we are under attack. Everybody gets something. Is that possible? What happens when they're messaging? Why did Iran tell the U.S. they're doing it?
Yeah, I think it's too strong a word to say choreographed, But there was communication and telegraphing of intentions. People had warning. It was not a surprise attack. And so they could get organized and get ready. So obviously, Iran was trying to push back, reestablish some face, reestablish some deterrence. You can't just hit me all the time and I'm never going to respond. But it didn't want to trip into a major escalation. Now, that's what it looks like. I got to say, there are some missile analysts who have said over the weekends, well, geez, this 1,000 or whatever it was, missiles and drones is not a small thing.
Right, one had gone south, right. I mean, one little girl was severely injured, we should say.
Yeah, and it was larger than the U.S. military had expected. The size of the attack was larger. So I think we're in this sort of uncertain range where no one wants anything to go really, really badly, presumably, although there are other scenarios here. But there's uncertainty, and people are playing in the darkness and playing at the edges, and the unpredictable can happen. So I don't think it was choreographed, but I think people were cautious.
Yeah, and knew it was coming. Look, what happens now? I mean, everybody's waiting for that shoe to drop. But if that part of any kind of messaging wasn't worked out beforehand, you know, how to know if Iran, as it's saying, is finished, if this was just a demonstration? How to know how Netanyahu will respond to right-wingers in his cabinet?
Well, I think the driving thing here will be Israeli objectives and intentions. Remember, it was Israel who had this sort of mini escalation by hitting the diplomatic compound. They had to so they either thought Iran was going to swallow it and not respond, in which case they were incorrect and perhaps showing a little hubris there, or they expected Iran to respond and are going to use that as an opportunity to escalate. Well, the second option is awful, probably not as likely than the simple miscalculation explanation, but we'll know soon, right? If they were planning to escalate all along, then I expect that they would escalate sooner rather than later.
And again, we've been asking this question, what does that do to Gaza?
There's two views to this. One is they're wholly separate because they use different sorts of military assets. They're different types of wars. And the other is you can't fight two wars at one time. It's with one society. It's going to have to be integrated. It's going to have impacts on each other. And that's the debate that's happening in Israel right now. Can we fight two wars at the same time separately? I doubt that you can.
Well, I was actually thinking, what happens to the people of Gaza? If, in fact, the spotlight moves from them and the famine that is occurring there.
Absolutely.
Here now, security analyst Jim Walsh. Thanks, as always. We'll have you back.
I look forward to it.
Coming up next, one of Trump's trials got underway today in New York. Get up to speed with Scott Tong after the break.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator for Planet Money podcast on NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. With thousands of options under $20,000, plus customizable financing terms and down payments as low as $0 down, it's easy to find a car that fits your lifestyle. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today. Terms and conditions may apply.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Jury selection starts today in Manhattan in the first criminal trial against former President Donald Trump. He is accused of felonies linked to payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels during the 2016 presidential campaign. Trump is in the courtroom today. Now, this case has seen twists and turns and misinformation. Here to talk about it is Louis Jacobson. He's senior correspondent at the publication PolitiFact. Lou, welcome.
Thanks very much.
You know, often the shorthand is that this is a case about hush money paid to an adult film star, but the indictment accuses former President Trump of trying to influence the 2016 presidential election. Help us understand the election part of this case.
Yeah, so, you know, technically he is facing 34 counts of falsifying business records to cover up the payment to Stormy Daniels, the adult film star. But just on their own, those are just misdemeanors, fairly minor level of crime. What the DA is trying to do is to basically say that these 34 counts are in furtherance of a second crime or a third crime. The idea is that Trump used this hush money to keep quiet about the affair, or the alleged affair, I should say, and that, you know, had an influence on the election.
Let me ask you about a jury selection, which begins today. New York City has far more registered Democrats than Republicans. How will jury selection work?
So it could take a week or two. Basically, they have made public already the full juror questionnaire. They really, you know, obviously some are just very basic information about sort of demographic information,
okay.
You know, if they know any of the people who are witnesses or the defendant personally. But there are also questions that are geared towards getting kind of into the juror's mind as to how they think and how they will treat the case. So, for instance, they talk about the prospective juror's news or social media consumption habits, if they've supported or belonged to an anti-government group, such as the Proud Boys, or if they identified as QAnon, if they've attended a Trump rally or signed up for a pro-Trump newsletter. What the prosecutors really are trying to do is to get people who can set aside their biases and just really deal with all the evidence presented at trial and decide the case fairly.
Yeah. There are a couple of false claims in play in the public conversation here, and you've reported on this. One is Donald Trump making this false claim about the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg on social media. Trump tried to link Bragg with the Biden administration, falsely suggesting coordination. What is he talking about?
Yeah, so what he's trying to do is basically, you know, pin this on Biden. And Trump is pointing to one of Bragg's prosecutors, Matthew Colangelo, mm-hmm. who formerly worked for the Justice Department, the federal Justice Department, as well as the New York Attorney General's office. During his stint with the New York AG, he did investigate the Trump Foundation and led lawsuits against the Trump administration. But his presence on the team doesn't prove that the Biden White House or campaign officials are coordinating the case or did coordinate the case with Bragg.
Yeah. Donald Trump has made another false claim about the alleged affair. Stormy Daniels earlier publicly denied the affair, but then recanted and said, yes, it in fact happened. What's the backstory here?
Yeah, so a few days before the trial, Trump wrote on his platform, Truth Social, look what I just found. And he asked if the fake news would report it. It was a January 30th, 2018 letter by Stormy Daniels saying, I am denying this affair because it never happened. First of all, this is not new. It was widely released at the time that it came out in 2018. But second and more important is that soon after that, Daniels recanted. And she explained that her denial had stemmed from a non-disclosure agreement. And she said the parties involved had made it sound like I had no choice but to say that. And so once she came clean about what she says actually happened, that former statement was really moot.
Yeah. And finally, and we are going to be following this case as it goes, and it will go for a while, but there is a so-called gag order in place from Justice Merchan in this case. Tell us about that.
Sure. So on April 1st, the judge in this case, he actually issued an order barring Trump from speaking about witnesses or counsel in the case other than Alvin Bragg, the DA, and the judge himself. And he also said that Trump could not speak about members of the court staff or their family members if those statements were made to interfere with the case. So we spoke to a variety of experts, legal experts on this, and they say that, you know, it's always a tough call trying to balance those two factors, you know, free speech and sort of preserving the justice system and its integrity. But they said that gag orders of this sort are not at all rare. And are pretty well supported by case law and precedent.
And we will watch the extent to which it holds going forward. We've been talking to Lewis Jacobson. He's senior correspondent for PolitiFact. Lou, thanks so much.
Great. Thanks so much.
Coming up, Robin speaks with two running legends, two-time NCAA champion Kara Goucher and Des Linden, who won the Boston Marathon in 2018. On your marks, get set. And actually, hold on a minute. We'll be back in just a second.
On NPR's Throughline,
we cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt, because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
On It's Been a Minute, we're keeping you in the know when it comes to culture. I break down the latest trends and the forces behind them and introduce you to the creatives who think deeply about how we live today. Come for some good old cultural analysis and have a few laughs with me. Listen to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Running enthusiasts might recognize this.
Hey, howdy, everybody. It's Kara and Des with Nobody Asked Us, presented by TCS.
The new Nobody Asked Us podcast, the creation of American distance running legends Des Linden and Kara Goucher. Kara joined us a year ago when her book The Longest Race was released, with revelations of the mental and sexual abuse she endured from her Nike coach, Alberto Salazar. She testified about doping during Nike's famed Oregon Project. She's medaled at the World Championships and the Boston Marathon. Des Linden won the Boston Marathon in 2018, the first American woman to win in 33 years. Well, today is the 128th running of the Boston Marathon, and we sat down with both women on Friday. You'd think, with a new podcast, they would be microphone ready. Kara, Des, welcome to the studio. You can talk.
Howdy.
Thanks for having us.
I didn't want to step on her. I was like, she's going to go right in. She's the leader
she's
of the pod.
Me the space.
Of course, we got up and, pardon the pun, running. Kara is now a running commentator for NBC. Des was in Boston to run today's race, her 11th. We started by asking Kara about a health issue. Kara, you're wrestling with something now, dystonia, a nerve reaction, in your case, in your leg, where when you make a footfall, you can't even feel it. You're getting treatment for it that you think is really going to help. But how hard is this for you, a marathon day?
You know, it's tough just because I would love to run another marathon just for fun. And that's just not really in the cards for me, most likely ever. But I still really love being here. Boston is so special. So I got to be here and cheer Des all the way in. So I'm excited to be here.
Can I chime in there, though? She's racing a 5K, so she's going to be competing, and she's going to be running fast. She's going to take down her son, Colt's fastest time. We're all going to put her on our tracker and then check out her results when this comes out.
We'll see. I have been training with the goal of breaking my son's 5K
heart.
PR and his soul. So it's just been a fun challenge and something that I can do within the constraints of what I'm allowed to do.
That's inspiring. But it also feels like, is this what happens on the podcast?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's conversational. We kind of rib each other a lot.
And what else does nobody ask you about but you want to talk about?
Oh, there's so much. The nitty-gritty of racing, and we could really dive into that. And then it's about the business behind the scenes. It's the broadcasts. It's fandom. And we want to raise up the sport and try and make it better.
Yeah. I feel like I'm sitting with you guys. Not that I could ever sit around with you guys and talk about running, you know, in the way that you do, but that's what it feels like.
I think you'd be just fine.
You'd fit in just fine. I mean, it is really casual. We'll text each other some ideas of what to talk about, and then we just kind of go where the conversation goes. We both love running. We're so passionate about it in all levels. And so it really, you would fit in just fine, Robin.
Well, thank you. And I would represent women. You know, we had to wear boys' Tiger sneakers when we started because they didn't even make running shoes for women. And then later, I'm thinking of Patty Catalano. one of nine kids who decided to put sneakers on one day. She came in second in the Boston Marathon, held a world record, no training. Do you think about the women who came before?
Absolutely. I mean, we got to make our living, and Des is still doing it, doing what we loved, running, seeing how fast we could be competing, being able to be full-time athletes. And without those women, we never would have had that opportunity. So yeah, we think about them a lot.
Well, and also the problems in the sport. So, Kara, we know, we follow you on Twitter. Many of your posts these days are about doping. This was something that you know, was part of your whistleblowing. There's bans on the Russian Nikolai Chavkin and his teammate Ekaterina Gulyayev based on samples from 2012, 12 mm-hmm. years ago.
I want people to know that it's a big problem. You know, we're talking about the samples from 2012, which goes into the story of Alicia Montano, who should be a four-time global medalist, who missed an Olympic medal in 2012, finished fifth on the day, and now two people in front of her have found to have been doping. And that it's 12 years later and she's finding out. She never gets to have that moment. Her family never got to witness her become an Olympic medalist. So much is robbed and stolen from people. And I think it's important to keep that in the limelight, to know that it isn't a level playing field. And people like Des go out there and do their best because there's nothing she can do. But I'm on the other side of it, and I can keep talking about it and keep reminding people that we have a lot of work to do in the sport.
Well, Des, I want to ask you point blank. Are there, you know, runners you're going to be maybe in that starting line with who everybody knows?
I feel like this year feels pretty good, but in general, it's kind of a given. That's just the reality of it. I think one thing that's interesting with our sport is we are trying to police it. We do a fair amount of testing, and when we catch these people, it becomes public, which on the one hand, it looks like, well, there's this huge problem in the sport, and that's not wrong, but we're also doing a really great job, unlike many sports, to clean up the problem. So it's balancing those stories, which always come out around big events. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, track and field, running, road running, mm-hmm. big doping problem. But there's also really incredible athlete stories and people doing it the right way. And we got to dig into those stories, too, the people who are doing it right.
Who do you think is one of the most unheralded women's runners today?
Edna Kiplagat.
100%.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why? Tell us more.
She's in her 40s. She's consistent. She's never had any sort of scandal around her whatsoever. She's won Boston. She's been twice, did you say? Mm-hmm.
She was second, I think, the COVID year, and then got upgraded after a drug bust. So that's kind of the story of her mm-hmm. career. She's mm-hmm. always been just below the top, and she was at the top for a long time as well, but she's been upgraded a lot. So, yep. Sorry, carry on, Kara.
No, I agree. Just her career is just unbelievable, and she's so consistent and races with such consistency. And also, from my point of view, what I find really interesting about her is she was good pre-Super Shoe era and post-Super Shoe era. She's been one of the athletes that's been able to adapt, and I just think she's phenomenal. And just like Des said, a lot of her moments have been stolen. You know, she's always consistently top three. More than once, she should have been first, and she didn't get to have that feeling.
And she's just one of the sweetest people you'll ever meet. Just a genuinely good person. Like, you want to sit down and chat with her, and you root for her. It's really easy to root for her.
Okay, duly noted, Edna Kiplagat. And you mentioned Super Shoes. Well, can we ask a question? And by we, I mean Karen Miller-Medson, producer, terrific runner. Can we just make a decision about how high sneakers should be? I love them. I've got my Asics on, and you know, the Hoka, everybody's like elevated, and she's afraid she's going to twist an ankle. So you both, Brooks, mm-hmm. both with Brooks. What's the thinking about what women need in the future in shoes and what maybe we don't need?
Go ahead.
I mean, that's a tough question. Look, I never wore super shoes or these really tall shoes when I was competing. That came at the very end of my career, and I took sort of this stance that I wasn't going to wear them. And now you have to wear them. If you're not wearing them, you're just leaving time on the table and giving your competitors an advantage. What I'd like to see is less focus on the times, more focus on competitions. Let's bring it back to just people competing for themselves, for their countries, against each other, and stop worrying so much about the clock. I mean, the evolution of these shoes are to make you faster. And I feel like we've lost a little bit of the magic of what running just really is.
Huh. Des, any thoughts?
Take down the clock. Team, take
down
the clock.
Take down the clock.
But I'm not pro super shoes, but there are some pros to super shoes where recovery is easier. And so I think you're seeing more longevity, which is probably a good thing. I think they make running a little bit easier for people getting into the sport. It's a little less harsh on the body. So there's an upside to that, too. you got to weigh it out. But mm-hmm. in terms of just pure racing, I think go back to the basics and just get us lower to the ground, but not quite barefoot.
Yeah, no, we're like on platform shoes yeah. with our yeah. sneakers. Take down the clock. I mean, what will we do if we don't know what we've shaved off our time?
But that's the beauty of the Boston Marathon, right? I mean, people aren't worried about what time. I mean, maybe they want to run a PR on Marathon
Personal
Monday,
best,
but but really they qualified to be here and now they just want to have a good race. And this course is tough. It's a hard course. It's not necessarily the fastest course you could go run. So that's the magic of a race like a Boston Marathon, is that people are out there just competing. And of course they're paying attention to time a little bit, but it doesn't own the entire experience like it does at other events. So yeah. Boston is doing it right by yeah. nature of the course, I think.
Yeah. Kara, I just got to ask you, what a stunning book you wrote, what you revealed about the sport, about a superstar within the sport, Alberto Salazar, the doping, the sexual abuse, the verbal abuse, as all these runners on Nike's team were kind of siloed, you know, away from everyone else. What was the fallout? What's been the response? How are you feeling about it?
You know, I was really nervous right before, wondering why I decided to share all of this stuff publicly. But honestly, I have felt so free since the book came out. I felt like I had a backpack of other people's baggage on and still trying to protect other people. And I think that was holding me back from true happiness and being able to let go and move on. And so the last year has been incredibly healing for me. And sure, there's been some negative comments or accusations, but I've dealt with a lot worse, and I feel completely free from everything that I experienced. And I feel like by saying it out loud and saying what happened, I released a lot of the shame, and it helped me to truly heal.
Hmm. So you didn't know each other. You start this podcast. Des, tell me one thing you learned from Kara.
One thing I've learned from Kara. I mean, I think it's just to speak your truth. And we get on the pod and she does that, but also is open-minded about other, you know, opinions.
And Kara, same with Des.
She's not afraid to say something that may not be the most popular opinion. And she really just stands in her conviction. Des is Des, and I really, really respect it.
Mm. It's just a reminder that an athlete is more than her feet.
Yes.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
By the way, if you want to hear our reporting from the finish line of today's Boston Marathon, head to hereandnow.org. That's our show. Here and Now Anytime comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Kalyani Saxena, James Mastromarino, and Karen Miller-Benson. Today's editors were Todd Munt, Ahmad Daman, Peter O'Dowd, Michael Scotto, and Kat Welch. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Caleb Green. Mike Moschetto also wrote our theme music, along with Max Liebman and me, Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
These days, news comes at you fast. But the truth? Getting there takes time.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Embedded is a podcast that takes the time to look beyond the headlines.
How did this happen? How did we get here?
With original documentary storytelling. Listen to NPR's Embedded wherever you get your podcasts.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.